This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, T-Bone Burnett, is admired for the music he performs and the music he produces. He's a singer-songwriter-guitarist from Texas who writes sometimes witty, sometimes dark songs about contemporary life. He's made several highly regarded albums of his own songs. He's also produced albums by Elvis Costello, Roy Orbison, Los Lobos, and the Bodines. Columbia has just released Burnett's new album. It's his first in 4 years. It's called The Criminal Under My Own Hat. Burnett was just in Philadelphia for a performance. We invited him to our studio to talk with us and play a few tunes. Here's T-Bone Burnett in the Fresh Air studio, getting things started with a song that's also featured on his new album.
This is called It's Not Too Late, even though sometimes I'm not so sure.
The wind turns like a dagger, the rain falls like a hammer, the sky has grown dark, but it's not too late. The weather crashes down, what's lost cannot be found, the night is closing, but it's not too late. It's not too late, it's not too late. It's not too late, it's not too late. The atmosphere is lethal, but I will feel no evil. The ocean rolls like thunder, the tempest pulls us under, the dogs are howling, but it's not too late. As broken structures rust, false idols turn to dust, all lies in ashes, but it's not too late. Too late, it's not too late. It's not too late, it's not too late. The atmosphere is lethal, but I will fear no evil. Before the dawn, the echo of the siren song dies away like a ghost as the day breaks. Too late. The atmosphere is lethal, but I will fear no evil.
That's a great song. Is there a story behind writing it?
No.
Well, let's end the interview then.
No, only that I got stuck on this song because, you may have noticed that all it talks about is how horrible everything is, and then it says it's not too late.
Right.
And I couldn't figure out why it wasn't too late, you know. And then I realized, Bob Neuwirth came in and started working on it, and I realized that the reason it wasn't too late is just because, Just the very act of looking at what's wrong is hopeful. You know, the thing that kills us is when we deny what's wrong.
Is this one of the songs that Elvis Costello wrote with you, too?
Yeah, well, then he came in and wrote the bridge. He came in and wrote the sort of, put the, you know, the very major hopeful bridge in there. So he finished it off.
So he's the one who put the optimism in?
Well, no, he's the one who put the, yeah, musically speaking.
Okay.
To say Elvis Costello's an optimist would be paltering with the truth, I must say.
The press release that accompanies your new record says that you took 3 years. It describes it as a 3-year extended vacation during which you reassessed your musical priorities. What is that about?
Well, what I did. I just took 3 years off. I finished working on Spike with Elvis Costello.
You produced that for him?
I produced it with him. Yeah, and I think I'd just about had enough. You know, I'd been working in the studio for 5 or 6 years straight. I hadn't really been out in public but a couple of times, and went back to Texas and thought and read a lot. You know, because you know, living in Los Angeles, all events in the world conspire to make one think about everything he shouldn't be thinking about, I feel, especially so in Los Angeles, in the media capital of the world, where any little tremor is viewed as a cause for a 90-minute special on television. And things get blown way out of proportion, and it was I actually keep my residence in Texas and live in Texas for just that reason, because I don't want to start competing. For artists or for poets, and I use that in the most metaphorical sense of the word, to compete creates a metaphysical doubt that poisons everyone, you know. And, the record companies are competing, the radio stations are competing, the critics are competing, the newspapers are competing, the record stores. It's all competition. It's all lists. What's the best record of the year? What are the 10 best records of the year? What's right. Selling the most? It's all competition. See, and you just have to somehow divorce yourself, or not even divorce yourself from it, just completely ignore it. So that's what that was about, going away and ignoring it.
Let me ask you to play another song is on your new record, and this is actually the song that opens up the new record. The album, I should mention, is called The Criminal Under My Own Hat, and my guest is T-Bone Burnett. And why don't you do the opening song, Over You?
Okay, Over You.
There's a fine line between love and hate that we erased, that we erased. What started as a mask became a face, the pain untraced, the pain untraced. I've been a long time searching for you, I've been a long time breaking through, gonna be a long time getting over you, over you. Standing in my doorway facing south, the moon comes up, the sun goes down. Wondering what this noise was all about, the dust blows in, the light blows out. I've been a long time looking for you, I've been a long time breaking through, gonna be a long time getting over you, over you. Down the road I see the fog roll in, as thick as fear, as dark as sin. We live in an age lit by lightning, after the flash, we're blind again. I've been a long time looking for you, I've been a long time breaking through, gonna be a long time getting over you, over you. Over you, over you.
It's a great song by my guest T-Bone Burnett, and that's a song from his new album, The Criminal Under My Own Hat. I hear a lot of like folk influence in that song as well as rock and roll.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so what were you first listening to when you started to play?
Well, when I first started to play, I listened to Jimmy Reed, I guess.
Yeah. Oh.
Who, and Hank Williams, who I guess would both be folk music musicians. You know, Muddy Waters.
Blues, too.
Yeah, but you know, back then they called Muddy Waters folk music. But I guess that's just because folk music was happening at the time, and I think that's probably what the deal is about labels anyway. It's just a way to try to sell them, to identify them, so that, you know, put them in a certain part of the record store or something.
So is that what you learned to play early on, that
kind
of stuff?
Yeah.
And were you in bands when you were young?
Just for a little while. I was in a band for about 6 or 8 months, and we decided to get a job that we should go make a record. And so we went into this recording studio called Clifford Herring Sound, where "Hey Baby" had been recorded by Bruce Chanel. It was you know, one of the two or three recording studios in Texas. And we recorded a song, and it was so much fun, we decided to buy the studio. So we bought the studio, and then that was the end of the band, basically. Somehow, because I started, I guess, you know, I was 17 years old, and I had to start working.
You bought the studio?
Yeah.
When you were 17?
Yeah, 16 or 17, yeah.
Where'd you get the money?
Well, we borrowed it from the bank, you know. But back then studios weren't like they are today, you
right,
gotta remember.
Right.
Back then there were, you know, just a few little things. So we leased the space that it was in and bought the equipment.
Huh. So would you produce your own stuff or other people?
Yeah, well, we produced, there's a band called the Van Dykes, an R&B band that had a lot of hits. There's this guy, the legendary Stardust Cowboy, that's become kind of a something. I don't know what he is. You know, a obscure, kind of famous person, if there's such a thing. And then, let's see, what else did we do? I don't remember what else we did. It was a long time ago.
Well, this helps explain how you ended up producing, too. I guess you were interested in it early on.
Well, the first gig, so to speak, I ever had was with the Rolling Thunder Review with Bob Dylan. That was the way I got started on the stage.
It's hard to think of that as being like a first gig.
Yeah.
How old were you?
I was 25 or something like that.
And how'd you get to be in it?
Well, they just called me up and said, you want to come play in this? I was friends with Bob Newirth, who was putting together the tour with Bob Dylan. And he sent me a ticket to New York and said, come play this, come play in my band, he said. And I said, sure, and it ended up being this other thing.
I just happen to have here a quote that I'm sure you've heard many times before, that Sam Shepard wrote about you after the Rolling Thunder tour, and he wrote about you that you have a peculiar quality of craziness about you. He said he's the only one on the tour I'm not sure has relative control over his dark side. What did Sam Shepard mean by that?
Well, maybe it must have been that night I cut through his door with a chainsaw.
Did you? Is that a joke?
Well, it was a joke, yeah, but no, I didn't. No, I don't know. He's right about that.
Has your relationship to your own dark side changed since then?
Yeah, I think, yeah, I try to look at it more. It's not any less dark than it ever was. I don't think that. Maybe darker, but it's not as free to run rampant as it once was. It's not scary either anymore, you know.
Did you do a lot of crazy things when you were younger?
Well, when I was at the Betty Ford Clinic. No, yeah, I did. I still do a lot. I do as much. I try to have a good time, you know. I try to stay loose. I try not to get too worried about it all. Is that a good answer?
Well, not very forthcoming, but.
Oh, what are you? Well, I'm not. No, I don't believe in that. Confessing all it doesn't matter, you know. You hear a lot of people like bragging about how bad they used
to
be.
that's true.
You know, it's however bad I was, it was just a lightweight compared to the people who are really good at being bad.
Right. Is it too personal to ask if becoming a Christian changed your behavior or your relationship to your dark side?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think so. I mean, yeah, I think so. Absolutely.
That it did, or that it's too personal to ask?
No, it's not too personal to ask at all. No, it's, you know, it's a long road. It's a, you know, people talk about becoming a Christian like it's something that happens to you in 1 minute and then you're better the whole rest of your life and everything. I mean, or you're, you know, cured of all evil the rest of your life or something. I haven't found that to be true. In fact, I find trying to follow Christ is incredibly difficult and moment to moment. And it's the good, that's the great thing about it, I think, is that particular road, is that it is moment to moment and difficult. It's not some easy solution to, you know, life. It makes, it may, you know, I don't know, it's such a long, hard subject to get into. Yeah. But, you know, I see people like, well, like Tipper Gore, you know, and who seems to be a very nice lady, and I'd love to talk with her. I'd love to sit down and talk with her sometime. But, or Donald Wildman or these people. Now, see, it seems to me these are people that don't want to look at their dark sides.
T-Bone, why don't we take a short break?
Okay.
And then we'll talk some more.
Okay.
And we'll hear some more music. And my guest is T-Bone Burnett, and he has a new album out called The Criminal Under My Own Hat. Is there a My Own in that? Under My Own Hat.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And we'll take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. I'm with T-Bone Burnett, and you know, before we hear some more music, I just want to ask you a couple of things about producing. You've produced records for a bunch of other people, including Elvis Costello and Roy Orbison. What are the big issues when, for instance, when you were producing for Roy Orbison, what were the issues about what to do, what kind of sound to get, decisions that you had to make about it?
Well, you know, each particular subject presents its own set of problems and strengths, you know. And Orbison, he had this huge legend that he was dragging around with him, you know. It was very, I think it was very difficult for him to get back in the studio in the first place. I think the one overriding.
This is around Blue Velvet time that you did this?
Yeah. The interesting thing about Orbison, and he's one of the, probably the few people that can say it, he was 50, I think, when he died, or 50-something. And he did all those songs in the same keys that he did them in originally.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so, I mean, he was...
Because he had an enormous range.
Yeah, he had a huge range. And he never opened his mouth. And he sang very, very quietly. Like, he just had so much resonance in his body and in his soul that those notes would come out huge. But they were incredibly quiet when he sang them. So he never strained his voice. Right. He never... overused it. George Jones is the same way. For that huge voice he has, he sings very quietly.
Now, what about producing with Elvis Costello? A different set of issues to deal with?
Absolutely. I mean, Elvis is the most engaged person I've ever met in my life and has 1,000 ideas that he wants to put down all at once, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and all of them should be put down, too. What you have to do with him is to try to help him get them down and then help him sort through them.
Yeah, he was putting all those ideas probably in one set of lyrics too, right?
Yeah, well, he, no, I mean, he can do that. He's got so many ideas. I hold Elvis in the highest regard, absolutely.
Yeah.
And he's got so many ideas that he should write maybe, he's got songs that he should write songs for every verse or every line, you know? They're 10 songs in one.
You occasionally on your records put in a standard like you've done Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend, a pop standard. Now, I asked you if for your performance today on Fresh Air, if you would do a surprising standard for us, something that we might be surprised to hear from you. So you've got something picked out. Could you do it for us?
I'm going to try to do this with apologies. I do this... with fear and apologies. This is a beautiful song by Rodgers and Hart. Which song was it? It seems that we have met like this before. We looked at each other in the same way then, but I can't remember where or when. The clothes you're wearing are the clothes you wore. The smile you were smiling then, but I can't remember where or when. Some things that happen for the first time
happening again. And so it seems that we have met before and laughed before and loved before, but who knows where or when.
I love to hear you do standards. How did you start start doing them?
I love those songs. I guess I've heard these things all my life, haven't we all?
Well, I certainly did.
Yeah. And when I started studying songwriting, I started looking back at a lot of these old songs.
Yeah.
That's what happened with me. I started trying to figure out ways to do them, which I never really figured out a way to do that when I just happened to love that song. Yeah. There's probably some way I could take it and make it more my own, you know. But I don't know how, actually. That's a deep song. Well, you got to do that. That song's got to be like a dream, you know. That song's a dream. It's a very, you know, it's all longing and distant and in the mist. And it's beautiful.
Thanks for being with us and for talking with us and playing for us. Really enjoyed it a lot.
So happy to be here.
And T-Bone Burnett's been my guest. He has a new album, and several of the songs he played are included on that album. It's called The Criminal Under My Own Hat. That's on Columbia Records. And I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.